Would you turn, please, to the book of Ruth? That's in the beginning of your Bible, about the eighth book in. We've been traveling through the book of Ruth this month. And if I may, I'd like to bring us up to chapter 3, which is where I'd like you to turn. I'd like to just get a running start at chapter 3. You remember the opening scene has this man named Elimelech and his wife Naomi and their two sons Mahlon and Chilion headed to a land called Moab, a neighboring land. The reason they were going, because there was a terrible famine in the land where they stayed. Famine, no crops, hard to eat when there's no food. You know, we got to go. And they found, trouble is, that was not a place they were supposed to have gone. They were not to associate with that people. They were certainly not to intermarry. But before it's over with, their sons had indeed married Moabite women. The husband dies, and then before long, the two sons die. And this woman, Naomi, is bereft of her husband and her two sons, and she's got nothing, nothing anywhere. She's lost, she says, everything, including hope. And so she says, well, I might as well head home. I hear they've got food back in my hometown of Bethlehem. So off she heads to Bethlehem. Her two daughters-in-law, also widows, they say, we'll come with you. And so they head down that road, and all of a sudden, Naomi seems to say, wait a minute, what are you coming for? You're Moabite women, don't you know you won't be welcome back in Israel? She didn't say that, but I think that's what was going through her mind. You're not going to find another husband there, that's for sure. It's going to be hard for you there. Why don't you go back? And before it's over with, one of the daughters does go back to her people and her gods. But Ruth stays with her and makes that incredible commitment, statement of commitment and devotion, and says, do not, please, urge me to leave you or turn back from following you, for where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord Yahweh do to me, and worse, if anything, but death parts you and me. Well, they headed on home after that, and Naomi returns to her hometown of Bethlehem. And she's been gone 10 years, and the people can hardly believe what this woman looks like. And they said as much, could this be Naomi? What those hard 10 years had done to her countenance were only matched by the bitterness in her heart. And she poured out her bitterness. Don't call me Naomi anymore. That means pleasant. Call me bitter. Call me Mara. Because God has done this. The Almighty, the one who could have done differently, he has done this hard thing to me. And four times she blames everything on God, lays it all on his feet. Not the fact that she was where she shouldn't have been. She's blaming, maybe I shouldn't have been there, she might have said, but this is not what I deserved. I didn't deserve it this bad. Well, in chapter 2 then, in spite of the only thing she could see was the darkness and the despair and the misery of her life, She wasn't able to see that this daughter-in-law of hers, Ruth, with this incredible commitment, this devotion and commitment till death, you don't have a husband anymore, you don't have sons to take care of you, I will take care of you. Till death and beyond, I will be what you don't have anymore. She couldn't see because of the misery and the despair and despondency of her soul, and that's the way it is sometimes when we're grieving deeply, isn't it? We cannot see reality, we can't see the good. But in chapter 2, the deep dark night begins. There's a crack of dawn over there. I see it just a little bit. And it starts with Ruth, this dedicated daughter-in-law, says to her mother, how about I go out and glean? That's the process of taking up the leftovers after the reapers have gone through the harvest fields. How about I go out and glean, take up the leftovers, and maybe that'll sustain us. And she, quote, happens. By chance, she comes to this certain field where there's this man named Boaz. And Boaz is a wealthy man and probably quite a bit older than her. We don't know exactly, but we think he's more along the age of Naomi, her mother-in-law. Boaz greets her with warmth and says, you stay right here and you stay with my employees, my men who are reaping, and my maids who are all this stuff, and you stay with them through both the barley and the wheat harvest. And he told his guys to pull out some extra so she'd have enough, and she was supplied for abundantly by his kindness. She goes home and tells her mother, yeah, and her mother can't believe how much she brought home, 50 pounds worth of grain that first day. Says, that's not normal. What's up? Well, I worked in a man's field named Boaz. Oh, Boaz, he's related to us. Yeah, I understand. And just catches a bit of a glimpse of light in a really dark time in her life. And it ends with verse 23 in chapter 2. Ruth stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean, get the leftovers, until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. And she lived with her mother-in-law. And now we come to chapter 3. And it says, then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to Ruth, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? And now, is not Boaz our kinsman, some of your our close relative, with whose maids you were? Look, Ruth, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Now, I think that Naomi is returning to something of the person that she used to be. What do I mean by that? Well, we have this central character in this book named Ruth. And Ruth is devoted to Naomi. And devoted to Naomi's God. And is kind and caring and compassionate and loyal. And all of these wonderful attributes that we discovered last week. But where did she get that? She became that woman because God changed her on the inside, her heart. But how did she meet this God of Israel who changed her from the inside? Well, that was through Naomi over in the land of Moab. And Naomi's powerful influence and impact on Ruth is why Ruth now serves the God of Israel and why Ruth now is this kind, compassionate, caring daughter-in-law to her mother, Naomi, mother-in-law Naomi. Now, Ruth was impacted by Naomi in better days. And Naomi must have been this kind of a person, caring, compassionate, mentoring, impacting on Ruth to such a point that Ruth said, I want what you've got. I want to be like you, mother-in-law. That's the Naomi that I think we used to have. And at times I've felt I've maybe been a bit hard on Naomi in chapter 1 where they went off to sojourn in the land of Moab where they had no business being. And they didn't. But maybe Naomi was dutifully following her husband. I don't know. But I see more and more that Naomi must have been an incredible woman of God. And it shows by how she impacted Ruth. Ruth, remember, was serving other gods in a land where they did not know the God who changes you from the inside out. Now she does. I attribute that in large, large measure to Ruth. Naomi, who so impacted Ruth that God got into Naomi's life. God got into Ruth's life. Boy, am I getting mixed up with these names. Okay. Now, chapter 3, what's these words coming out of Naomi's mouth? My daughter, should I not seek security for you? Wow. That's not the tone we've been hearing from Naomi, is it? No, it's all bitterness and resentment, and God did this, and he way overdid it on me, and I don't even have hope anymore. Well, now we see she is looking out beyond herself to Ruth and says, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? And she has a plan. Look, Boaz is our kinsman, our close relative, with whose maids you were working. Behold, he winnows barley tonight. Now, what is winnowing? We don't do too much of that in our day. You and me, we go to the store and we buy it already in the bag, and a whole lot has happened before that. Here's the process of harvesting, as I understand it. The reapers would be out in the fields with their sickles. They would cut the grain, the barley or the wheat, and then they would stand it up in sheaves, You remember the song, Bringing in His Sheaves? They'd stand it up in sheaves. I think the purpose of that is to let it dry and not rot with the moisture. After a while, they would bring it to the threshing floor. The threshing floor was a hard-packed area, maybe granite in the field or hard-packed dirt. And then they would take that grain that had the sheaves, and they would distribute it. There you see the ox cart has brought the hay or the grain, the sheaves, to the threshing floor area. They would just spread it out in the circle, and then they would trample it with animals or drag a sledge on it, as in here, or grind it in some other way. And the purpose is there to separate the grain from all the stalk and the all the stuff it grows with. You know that stuff. I'm in over my head, aren't I? They would beat it with a toothed sledge or trample it under animal hooves or crush it with the cart wheels. And once that was done, they would winnow is when you would separate the kernels from the husks and the chaff and the stalks. And the guy would put his fork in there like that, and he'd throw it up in there, and the air would drive the lighter chaff and the husks further away, and the heavier grain would fall back down. And he'd do this over and over again, or she. And in the process, you'd have grain in this pile, chaff over here, chaff they'd use for fuel. And the stalks over here, they'd use feed for the animals. The heavier grain they would keep. And they would collect those kernels of grain in piles. So here you see a pile in the middle of the grain and the stalks off to the side, or the stuff that's waiting to be ground, I can't tell. And here is an artist's rendition of the whole process. On your left there, you see the guys with their winnowing forks. You remember, he has already got his winnowing fork in his hand. Now that helps us understand he's separating. His winnowing forks are on the left there. They're throwing it up, and they let the breeze blow. Over here, the animals are bringing the cart from the field, and then in the center, they're threshing it, grinding it. Okay, now you know as much as I do about that process. Naomi says to Ruth, "Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight." So he's going to be doing this stuff, and it's going to happen tonight, probably when the breezes were good, maybe when it was cooler. "He winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight." Here's what I want you to do, Ruth, verse 3. "Wash yourself, therefore, anoint yourself with perfume, and put on your best clothes, probably take away your widow's garments, if she's still wearing those, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking." After he worked, he's going to have a nice big supper. "And it shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies. And you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do." And she said to her, verse 5, "All that you say I will do." And it appears they had a little bit more conversation than what we just got. We'll get to that in a moment. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had instructed her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk and had a great big meal and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. And she came secretly, assuming he's asleep by now, and uncovered his feet and lay down. Now that is so totally strange to our ears that we can't help but wonder, is everything on the up and up here? But we got to understand this is 3,000 years ago in a different culture and a different time. First of all, people did sleep at other people's feet. It was the servants. And they slept at an angle, if I understand correctly, at the master's feet. So she is going to lie down in the servant's position, if I understand correctly. She's also going down there to take his covering off his feet. You remember he had a big, nice meal, and he's fast asleep and probably sawing logs and the whole bit. And she uncovers his feet. What does that have to do with anything? Well, after a while, your feet get cold and you wake up, right? That's why he covered them to begin with. And so what happened? Verse 8, "It happened in the middle of the night that the man
Doesn't say it, probably, but his feet were cold, and he was startled, and he bent forward, and he flicked on the light and said, "What in the world are you doing here?" No, it was pitch black. He bent forward, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. And he said, "Who are you?" And she answered, keywords now, "I am Ruth, your maidservant." Maidservant. "So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a," keyword here, "kinsman redeemer, guardian redeemer, guardian friend," different translations, trying to get at what this is. This person is a relative who is charged with a duty called redemption. And what that means is a family would encounter a crisis. You would be cheated against, maybe, or robbed or stolen from or something. And a redeemer, a kinsman redeemer, meant a person closely related to you who would take up your case in court of law. He would help recover you if your land was lost. Like, for example, if you had to sell your land that rightfully belonged to you, he would buy that land back on your behalf for you. That's what a kinsman redeemer. He would recover that loss for you. She is laying down his feet and says, "Spread your covering over me because you are a guardian redeemer, a kinsman redeemer." She's invoking some law that was over all of the people of Israel that God had prescribed, and she's invoking it by this action. This is what tells us that she and Naomi had more of an in-depth conversation. And she's using this word, "spread your covering." The actual word is, "spread your wings over your maidservant, for you are a guardian redeemer." And that "spread your wings" is an allusion back to what Boaz had said back in chapter 2. Would you turn back to chapter 2 when Ruth was met by Boaz out in the fields on day 1, verse 11. 12 are his blessing to her, and Boaz says to her, May the Lord Yahweh reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. She heard that, and she remembered it, and she uses that terminology back to Ruth, but that was the picture of what the kinsman guardian redeemer was to do anyway. And she says it back to him. And you get the picture of an eagle covering the wings, with her wings covering her little chicks. Well, the nation of Israel was under the wings of Yahweh. And she says, "Spread your garment over your maidservant. I'm lying here in the servant's position. Spread the corner of your garment," or the garment, "over your maidservant, for you are a kinsman redeemer." Wow. That took us quite a while to understand the culture and dynamics of what was going on, because immediately that's not what most of us probably perceived with that kind of action. But that's not the way it was for Boaz. All the lights went off. Everything fit in order. He knew the command. He knew the principle. He knew the procedure. And how does he respond? He says in verse 10, this is an immediate response now. Get this. He's been sound asleep, right? Had a big meal, sound asleep, sawing the logs, and all of a sudden, my feet are cold. He startles. He wakes up. There's a woman there, and she says, "Spread your covering over me, for you're my kinsman redeemer." Whoa. And his response is, "May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first, by not going after young men, whether poor or rich." What in the world does he mean by that? "And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. And now it is true I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I." And that word "relative," he says, "it is true that I am a kinsman redeemer, a close redeemer. However, there is an even closer redeemer than I. And he is due this privilege before I am." However, remain this night, verse 13, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, same word, good, let him redeem you. Let him be the one that helps you, spreads his covering over you to protect you, give you the protection in court, the money, all the things that you need. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you as the Lord lives. He makes that promise by Yahweh's name. So lie down until morning. Wow. So get a load of that. You wake up in the middle of the night and somebody says, spread your covering over me. You're my kinsman redeemer. And that means what? It means he's contemplating a whole new direction of his life. There's going to be a woman attached to me. There's going to be land. There's going to be the care of Naomi, the mother-in-law that belongs to that land. And all of these things that in a moment are before Boaz, and he's been asked to do this by this woman lying at his feet and the whole garment thing, and he says, absolutely, I sure will. You can count on it. There's somebody ahead of me, but if he won't, I will. As the Lord lives, I will. Now, I was thrilled to finally have the chance to ask Barb to marry me, but I came to that decision rather slowly. I come to most decisions, kind of life-changing, altering decisions, kind of slowly. Boaz, like that. What is going on? How's he wired in such that he would do this? Well, let's keep reading. Maybe we can get back to that. Verse 14, so she lay at his feet until morning, rose before one could recognize another, for he said, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. What's that all about? Probably saying, look, don't want things to get ahead of things. We don't need any rumors being started. And so before she goes, he says, verse 15, give me the cloak that is on you and hold it. She held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. Laid it on her, probably quite heavy, 6 measures of barley. And she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, mother-in-law, Naomi says, how did it go, my daughter? And she told her all that the man had done for her. And she said, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said, do not go to your mother-in-law. You see that next word? Empty-handed. Now, who is the last person to use the word empty in this book? Naomi. I went out full, but Yahweh has brought me back empty. Isn't that just marvelous of the Lord to prompt Boaz to say something like, do not go to your mother empty-handed, mother-in-law empty-handed. Just another example of the Lord's kindness in that. And then Naomi said, wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it today. Well, I would love to go on into chapter 4, but we're going to have to stop right here and deal with what we have already covered and read. Do you see, Naomi? Naomi, do you see? Are you beginning to see the foundation of loving kindness that God has been laying for you? You've been blaming him for this and for that and the other, but actually we told you back at the end of chapter 1, oh, Naomi, if you could only see that actually God is laying for you a foundation of loving kindness that will overwhelm you. And now chapter 3, a bit of ray of light. And at the end, we ask her, Naomi, do you now see a little bit more of the loving kindness, that great foundation of loving kindness the Lord has been laying for you? He brought you home to Israel, to Bethlehem, your hometown. He brought you Ruth to come with you when you had no one. He brought you at the beginning of the barley harvest. He chanced it to be, so to speak, that Ruth would glean in the field of Boaz. And Boaz has heaped his
kindness on you during the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. And in one day she got 50 pounds worth of grain, which is what a man would earn for a 30-day period. And that apparently went on and on for the both harvests, barley harvest. And now Boaz has responded, as we read he did. Naomi, do you see this great foundation of loving kindness that the Lord has actually been laying for you all the while? And I want to ask the Naomis that are here this morning, do you see the foundation of loving kindness that God has actually been laying in your life, even when you thought misery and despondency and despair were all that you had, even when things did not turn out as you had dreamed or had hoped? Would you step back and look at how He has been laying a foundation of loving kindness for you? It's taken her a while, but it's beginning to materialize now that she, in such a way that she can see it. Sometimes you have to pause and look back a distance in order to see, to trace His loving kindness. Because in the moment, we rarely see anything but the tragedy, the hardship, and the pain. Sometimes in that hardship and tragedy and pain, our conscience is so busy condemning us that we say, I brought this, I must have done something, I brought this on myself, or they did it to me, or something else, I shouldn't have gone to Moab. And while you're in that mode, Satan whispers, yeah, but you weren't that bad. God did this to you. God did this to you in some measure of injustice. And then we begin to blame God. But sometimes it takes others to help us see God's loving kindness. For example, you remember what Boaz said of Ruth. Let's look at it. Chapter 2, verse 11. It took Boaz's own words to help Naomi perhaps see. Boaz answered and said to Ruth, all that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me. That means it was all over town, all over Bethlehem. It was fully reported to him how you, Ruth, left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. Ruth, that's choice, and I respect that. I would love to have you glean in my field, and I would love to tell my men to pull out some extra so that you can glean it. Boaz could see what a gem Naomi had in her daughter-in-law Ruth, but Naomi was just so stricken with her grief and despair and despondency and pain and hardship and bitterness and resentment to God that she couldn't see it. Sometimes we need somebody to come alongside us and help us see straight. Maybe you need to ask somebody to help you see. The old song, count your blessings, but maybe sometimes we need somebody to help us count our blessings. Well, let's step back just a minute. Chapter 3, and look at these three principal characters, Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz in chapter 3. Is there a pervading theme? Is there a common theme that you are seeing in these three lives? Chapter 3, verse 1. Naomi, her mother-in-law, said, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you that it may be well with you? Naomi's not thinking so focused on herself. All of a sudden, she's thinking about Ruth. And then verse 4 at the end, or verse 5, she says, Ruth says to her mother-in-law, all that you say, I will do. And then Boaz, his first words to her in verse 10 to Ruth, she's at his feet, the middle of the night, and he says, may you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first. What did he mean by that? You could have gone after younger men, maybe poor, maybe rich, younger men, but you haven't. You've gone after me, the aged Boaz, the older man, Boaz. What is that all about? Apparently,
Boaz perceived that she wanted the kinsman redeemer to redeem her. And that would solve a number of things. First of all, it would take care of Naomi. Well, maybe the first thing is it would continue to propagate Elimelech's family name. The family line would not die out that way. And it would take care of Naomi in her old age. And it would honor her dead husband, Mahlon. And then finally, it was an honor to Boaz to be asked to redeem someone like Ruth. A beautiful young lady wants an older man to redeem her. Which one was it? Or was it some combination of all of those? He says, your last kindness, what's he referring to? Well, her first kindness was that one in chapter 2:10. You've been doing this for your mother-in-law, and it's been told to me. It's all over town. And now he says, your last kindness, asking me to redeem you, is greater than your first. And which was it? Care for the family name, the line would not die out, care for Naomi in her old age, and it wouldn't mean that Ruth would have to be divided in her loyalties. She could be a part of the family and also taking care of her mother-in-law. Or was it this kindness to Boaz himself? Well, it doesn't say, but it just says, your kindness, this kindness, is greater than your first. So what is the attitude in Ruth? Naomi's now looking outside of herself for Ruth's interest. And Ruth is now saying, whatever you say, mother-in-law, I'll do. And then when she comes to Boaz, he recognizes her kindness. Wow. And then Boaz himself, all that you say, I will do. Don't fear. I'll do it first thing in the morning. There's somebody ahead of me, but if he won't, by Yahweh, I will. And we look at Boaz's life, the way he treated his employees out there on the field. He greets them with this generous blessing. They greet him back. How many employers and employees interact that way? Was that just for story effect? I think it's the way this man was. Everywhere he went, and the generosity, telling his servants to pull out extra grain, and six measures to your mother, don't go to your mother-in-law, don't go back empty-handed. What do we see about Boaz that strikes you? Is he all about Boaz, or is he all about others? You get the sense that as wealthy as he was, he realized that everything he possessed was given to him by God so that he could share it with others, don't you? And you get the sense, too, that God was thrilled to bless him so bountifully because of his open-handed nature, his living. Friends, I suggest that the common theme... Where did I go? Oh, I'm going to have to go. The common theme that we have seen in Ruth and Naomi and Boaz is loving kindness. We see this word three times in the book of Ruth. And one of them is in chapter 2, verse 20, I believe. Naomi says to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed of the Lord who has not withdrawn his kindness, talking about Boaz, his kindness to the living and to the dead. And the next time, this other time we see it is in today's word, chapter 3, verse 10. You have shown your kindness, your last kindness, to be better than the first. And what does that word mean? And you've heard the Hebrew word is chesed, and it's a difficult word. We don't have an exact equivalent in English, but it encompasses, or it's translated by your Bibles as loving kindness or steadfast love, but it's really a very rich word. It encompasses these themes of loyalty. You're loyal, you're committed, you're faithful. Mercy is involved in that, kindness and love. All of these things are bound up in this word chesed. Normally, we think of that theme coming from God toward people. But in this book, and especially what we've been talking about today, we see this chesed, this loving kindness, this loyalty, commitment, faithfulness, mercy, kindness, and love is what exemplifies Naomi. It's what exemplifies Ruth, and it's what exemplifies Boaz.
Now, there are a couple of factors about this. It tends to spring from an existing relationship. I say tends to. The person who wrote these, who studied this word, said always, springs from an existing relationship. It involves an urgent need on the part of the recipient. It's a free act. It's not forced or obliged. And it involves extraordinary mercy and generosity, going well beyond the call of duty. So that's what this is, this word, and it's used of Ruth, and it's used of Boaz, and I say it's used by not just when the word appears, but the theme, the pervading theme of this person toward this, Ruth toward Naomi, Naomi toward Ruth, now especially that Naomi is healing, and of course Boaz towards employees, towards Ruth, and towards her mother-in-law, Naomi. All right. Loving kindness. Loving kindness. What does that say for us? Loving kindness. May I put this definition or this statement to you? Loving kindness, this chesed, is that godlike quality of loyalty, commitment, faithfulness, mercy, kindness, and love that can exemplify those who follow God, that does, as in the case of Ruth, Naomi, and Boaz, exemplify those who belong to God, and should exemplify those who belong to God. Can I say that again? Chesed, this loving kindness that we've seen in Ruth, Naomi, and Boaz, is that godlike quality of loyalty, commitment, faithfulness, mercy, kindness, and love that can, does, and should exemplify each of us who follow God. And Naomi and Ruth and Boaz are preaching with all they've got at us by their lives. This is what a life looks like that is ordered by that godlike quality of chesed, of loving kindness. And the question to us is, does that exemplify me? Does that exemplify you? This is the standard. Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz, I believe this, I believe it more than I've ever believed it, that this book is written to put feet to it on a human level of what loving kindness is all about. And they're preaching it to us, and they're saying, take it up, runner, take up the baton and finish the race in my example, following my example. And the question to us is, are we? Am I living this kind of loving kindness life? Is that what exemplifies me? Or am I caught up in my own things, my own goals, my own objectives, my own desires and wants? And the question is for you as well. Well, you might not like what you see. I sure don't about me. So how do we incorporate this? How do we become more like Naomi and Ruth and Boaz in this? Do we try harder? Do we grit our teeth? Do we resolve? And all these New Year's resolutions, and here it is already close to the end of March, and we've failed on all the others. What makes... Well, I suggest that we study these lives, first of all. Look at how they interacted with their employees, with their co-workers, and their associates, and their neighbors, and their... And when they were called upon to do something right out of the middle, in the middle of the night, he's called upon to alter his entire life. Study these lives and let them preach to us on a continuing basis. But that's still not enough. I think we need to say, Lord, would you transform me? Would you change me from the inside out like you apparently did for Ruth? Would you make me like Ruth and Naomi and Boaz so that when people talk about me, that's what they say I am marked by, this kind of loving kindness, others-centered, others-focused, not me-centered, Lord. You know I'm so that way. I need you to change me, transform me from the inside out. And when you realize, oh, what was I thinking? I did that. Why did I do that? Lord, that was not befitting of you. Please forgive me.
I did not exemplify chesed, your loving kindness that has roots in you, that godlike quality of loyalty and commitment, faithfulness and mercy and kindness and love towards someone else. Oh Lord, would you forgive me? So I'm asking you to study these lives, to ask God to transform you, and then to be quick to repent when we do not measure up to that standard. Got that? I think that might help. I don't have any other ideas. Look at the message God preserved for 3,000 years of these loving kindness lives. They're preaching to you and to me this morning. Ask God to transform you and be quick to say, God, I'm sorry when you mess up. Help me do better next time. What do you think? That work? Let's stand together.